Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Taken from my grandfather's notebooks, dated winter 1969. Thought they'd be a good place to start before I told you the rest of the story. Our family's from Washington State, and he spent pretty much his whole life in that same town up there as a logger. Journal of Roger Anderson B. Birth, 1949, death, 2009. November 18th, 1969. Logging going well as always. Hands a bit sore, nasty splinters. Mary helped me pull out some of them, but I should really get some thick gloves. Can't believe how tired I still get doing this. I guess my high school days are already behind me. Only 20, but you should see some of the older boys who take axes to these trees. They put men like me to shame. Went for a drink with them tonight. Took the truck back home, but took the long route around the forest. You know why. November 21st, 1969. Mary says she's going out of town. Thinks something might be wrong. You can always tell when a woman's hiding something from you, I guess. Maybe she doesn't like how soft her man is getting. Her jaw would drop if she knew I even wrote like this. Surprised, I'm doing more than swinging axes. This is Washington, not New York. So none of this will ever hit a publisher's desk. Unless something of interest starts happening up here. Cold night tonight. Stars are all out. Might go out and watch them. November 30th, 1969. Long week. A long, shitty, complicated week. I don't know where to start, or even if I want to. In the middle of the workday on Wednesday, we found Jack with his face down in the water, floating downriver in between the timber. You know how this works, obviously. We cut the trees and float them down the river to a sawmill to cut them into something usable. Nothing out of the ordinary. We assumed Jack had fallen and hit his head on the wood and passed out in the water. Poor bastard couldn't even do anything but drown at that point, we guessed. Big old bruise on his forehead. Pulled him out of the water and he was as blue as lapis, blood running down his face. His jacket was soaked through, and his boots had taken so much water that we weren't even sure we were strong enough to drag him out. We gave it all we got and pulled that poor turd out of the water. Checked to see if he was still breathing. Nothing. He was dead by the time we dragged him out onto the bank. That water was damn cold. We nearly froze ourselves trying to pull him out. And get this. On the far bank, this guy, never seen him in my life, was just watching us. Not moving. Not moving a damn inch. Just watching. Strangest thing I'd seen for years. Lost sight of him when we were checking Jack for life. Looking back, and the man was gone. Some people just ain't right. Staring at us and this poor dead feller like he was birdwatching. Odd enough. Lived here all my life, and I didn't recognize him. The service is tomorrow morning. We all poured a drink out on the ground for Jack that night. Couldn't bring myself to write before now. Thoughts to Janice, his girl. Hope she makes it out okay. December. Illegible either 2 or 3. 1969. Mary's pregnant. Went out of town to a fancy clinic just to make sure. I'm gonna be a father. How the hell am I supposed to do that? I still make my living shifting wood for pennies an hour, and I drive a beat-up old Chevy, for Christ's sake. Who the hell is gonna want to call me Dad? I think Michael for a boy, Charlotte for a girl. See what Mary thinks. December 4th, 1969. Finally, something to write about. Saw an old feller Frank down at the bar last night, and we just started talking and talking. Only conversation I could remember in my life that I almost got too scared to finish. Frank's been at the fire department for God knows how long, so he's seen some peculiar things over the years, but Christ, if this wasn't bizarre, I don't know what is. Got talking about Jack. Whole town's still buzzing with the news. Small town, everyone knows everyone and all that. He wanted to know what it was like pulling him out of the water. I guess everyone gets morbid and curious about these sorts of things. I filled him in on all the details. He just shook his head.
Shit goddamn luck,
Frank said when Jack came up in conversation. Cheers to that. We clicked our glasses and sipped in silence, letting the quiet hang there for Jack. Then I opened my mouth and I wish now that I hadn't. Wish I could find that old bastard, slap some sense into him. Serves him right for just watching us like that, not helping us or nothing. Frank turned, confused.
Who are you talking about?
Just some useless turd who was watching the whole thing from the woods. Didn't lift a frickin' finger to help us or nothing. Never seen the bastard before. It ain't right just watching like that. Frank froze, didn't move a muscle. He looked at me like I was Jack's ghost.
Which side of the river?
There was dead seriousness about him, so I didn't mince my words. West. West side of the river beneath the hills. Why, you know him? Frank took a deep gulp, polishing off his drink before waving Dale, the bartender, back over. He asked him to pour us two more.
Drink up, Roger, and get comfy. I have a story for you. You don't have to say nothing, just listen.
Don't even tell me what you think.
But I think I've seen that old boy from the woods before, and I don't think he's the type of man that you want to be seen.
Roger, remember that fire from the summer before last? Kids up there near the old water tower started smoking, nearly burnt the whole damn forest down? Of course. I could see the smoke for miles. The whole state probably smelt the burning. Hell, I reckon they saw it in Portland, Frank.
Frickin' right they did.
So I was one of them that got called out to put that fire down. You knew our fire department. Pretty rinky-dinky, right? Real basic stuff. More volunteers than actual firefighters. Couple of do-gooders out to help. You know the type, man. Your dad used to come out with us when he was young and, yeah, he told me about those days.
Well, here's something he didn't tell you.
Last summer, when we were putting that fire out, I saw something. I saw something odd, and I don't scare easily. Korea didn't break me in the 50s, and I'm a pretty straight-thinking MF. Takes a lot to rile me, but we were out there, fire blazing in all directions. Burning out of control, I tell you, Frank. It was like being in some kind of inferno or something, putting down the fire the best we could, and as quick as we could. I'm screaming, yelling, telling everyone what to do, spray this way and that. And then I notice, right there in the flames, hotter than hell, there's someone sitting there, just frickin' sitting there, not moving an inch, his back turned to me. First I thought it was one of them kids, some hippie turd still off his rocker on pot or LSD, or whatever the kids had been doing when they started the fire. But it wasn't a kid. I started hollering and screaming at this crazy bastard.
Get out of there! Get out of there now!
But the flames kept growing and raging and getting closer to this poor turd. I start to run towards him. Maybe I could get him out of the fire. Say, do you want another drink?
No, I'm fine. Keep going.
Okay, if you're sure. Anyways, I was running. Running like a bat out of hell. I ain't young, but I could still sprint when I need to. But I didn't need to, because this man, if I could even call him that. Hell, Roger,
He was laughing. I could tell from the way his shoulders were moving. He was sitting there in the flames, frickin' laughing. Strangest thing I ever saw. The flame was licking at the stump he was sitting on. He must have felt the heat. It would have been frickin' unbearable in what he was wearing in the flames like he was. But the bastard just laughed. I could hear others calling me, asking me what the hell I was doing charging head-on into a fire like that alone. Turned back around to look at the man on the tree. But he was gone. Just gone. Like he was never there. Like he was smoke or air. He just sat there, looking straight ahead. A couple of locals had overheard our conversation, and heads were turned as Frank raised his voice. But Frank said nothing. "Tell you, Roger," he said, drinking the last of his beer. "Those woods? Something ain't right about them. That man on the stump? Yeah, it's the strangest thing I've seen. But it ain't the only thing I've seen out there. Folks say there's lights in those trees at night, screaming like nothing you had ever heard. Coyotes scream like that. Make you think they're human, almost. I don't know. Just something ain't right." "I know, Frank," I said, almost at a loss for words. "My dad always told me to steer clear. I never knew why. Like he said, could have just been some stoned little kid." "I don't know a lot, Roger," Frank said, tipsy but lucid. "But I could tell you one thing. Whatever's in those woods, it ain't kids." Looking back on the conversation, I guessed it rang truer than I had liked to admit. I had always thought my old man was crazy, but I guess he wasn't alone in thinking something was out there in those trees. As long as I could remember, he always hated those frickin' woods. The journal ends here. On to part two. 1989. I couldn't find anything else from his notes, but my father remembers something about that town and those woods that you all might like to hear. I tried to type up the transcript of our conversation as best I could. He told me about something that happened to him in the winter of 1989, when he was back home from college for vacation. Winter, 1989. Words of Michael Anderson, son of Roger Anderson. I was visiting home from the winter back in 89, home for my first semester at Washington State. My father, your grandfather, was 40, and I was 19. He was younger than most fathers. He was only 21 when I was born. So we got along well even when I was a teen. Growing up in that town wasn't easy in the 1970s, before cell phones and good TV. Had to wait until I turned 16 and got my license before I could really do anything fun with my life. Obviously, we had been to Tacoma and Olympia and Seattle a few times. My father had a brother in Portland that we would visit once or twice when I was young, but for all intents and purposes, my world ended at the town limits. Seattle was the biggest city I saw until I met your mother. Anyways, I was trying to make ends meet, so I was picking up a shift at your grandfather's logging business. He had come a long way since 1969, let me tell you, and I got on well enough with all of his workers. For the most part, I had grown up with them and had known them since I was little. Some old high school classmates, their older siblings as well. College, even Washington State, was a luxury by that town's standards. So as funny as it sounds, they saw me as exotic almost. Cultured even. They used to josh around a lot, tell me I was getting big for my boots. Mr. Bigshot going off to college to study literature seemed alien to them. But for the most part, when I got home, I was one of them, just like I had always been. I asked my father whether he grew up hearing stories about the woods, whether people still spoke about them often, whether the myths around them had grown. Absolutely. Small town America and the Pacific Northwest. Some folk tales like those are almost a source of pride for folk like the people I grew up with. You weren't really considered a proper logging town without some tall tale of your own. Sure, for the most part it was pretty basic. Bigfoot, UFOs, stuff on TV. But for us, it was just the woods. Anyways, the woods. If you ever started talking about the forest, everyone knew immediately exactly which one you meant. Things were pretty mild at first. I was just detoxing from my time at the state. Seeing old pals, old girlfriends, that type of thing. Most days were the same. Up at first light, work hard through the day, finish off with the group nightcap at the local bar.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I was underage, but in our town, that type of thing don't really matter. Hell, the bartender knew everyone and their grandmother. So as long as he could vouch for you, you were okay. He'd pour you a drink. Besides, I was 19 by then, so I had already had my fair share to drink. Don't tell your mother I told you that. There was an old boy amongst the loggers, Dick Baines was his name, who worked alongside my father when they were both young men. He was sort of a mentor for the rest of us, one of the old guard, as it were to watch over the younger recruits. By that time, my father was long since given up the manual side of the job, and swapped to managing things. My parents were pretty comfortable by the time I was in my teens. Not bad considering my father was raised by 2 alcoholics in a trailer. One night, Dick didn't make it out to the bar with the rest of us after a Friday shift. Nothing odd. A lot of them had families by then, especially at Dick's age. Wife, some young kids. We thought maybe he was taking his missus out for dinner or just taking it easy. We drank as usual, and the night wore on. Dick never showed. Then this young kid, 2 years younger than me, his name was David, the grocer's son, if I'm not mistaken, and he bursted into the bar, white as a sheet. All the color had drained right out his face, like someone had pinpricked him and sucked the blood right out of his body. Freckly boy, bright red hair, very pale. We had thought maybe he had just too much to drink, thrown up on the porch. We laughed at first, but then we realized that boy wasn't drunk at all. He was as sober as a nun.
Dick Baines, he said, stuttering violently.
I thought he was about to pass out right then and there on the floor in front of us.
He hung himself.
The whole bar went dead silent. No one moved, not a whisper. Then Harry, Dale's son, who was on the bar that night, spoke up.
What the hell are you talking about, boy?
David, he's in the woods, just hanging there.
Now there was an unspoken rule about the town by then. Never take the woods' name in vain. I'm not joking. You told someone something happened in the woods, even if you told them you had seen Jesus walking amongst the pines, they take your word for it and follow you out there to see it. So we all grabbed our coats and filed out of the place, following David to see if it really was Dick up in some tree in the woods. I felt sick already. I don't know if a man is ever too old to see a dead body and not lose some part of himself in the process. And it was one hell of a cold night, too. Winter of 89. Yes, sir. One of the coldest on record. Roads frozen over. Snow was up here. My father held his hand up to his knee at this point. And we had been working all day. We were still covered in wood pulp and soaked from the river. So when we stepped out into the night air, we were exhausted, frozen through and a little drunk, still smelling like wet bark. David, skinny little feller, led us down the road towards the forest. We were all a little bit uneasy making the journey. We had all heard plenty of stories at this point, though most of us refused to believe they were true, but we all hated walking into the woods. About 50 yards in, we saw him, Dick Baines. Dead as a doornail hanging by the neck of a snowy branch. His feet about 3 feet off the ground. The moon was out, and in the light, Dick already looked like a ghost. Without exchanging a word, we all started the process of getting him down with some dignity. Two of us climbed the tree, and about 3 or 4 others clustered beneath him, gripping his legs tightly to catch him when he fell. Dick was one of us, so the code was clear. We weren't going to let his body touch the dirt. It wouldn't have been right. I took out my hunting knife, one your grandfather gave me when I was 15, and started cutting Dick down. The rope was wet with condensation, and I could see the marks on Dick's skin where the rope had dug itself into his neck. He was facing away from me, which I was grateful for, because I don't think I would have managed to cut him down with him looking at me. And sure enough, the rope was cut and the men below caught him, and they turned him over so that he laid facing the sky. A couple of them set about trying to get the noose off him. That's when we all saw it. He was mutilated. Badly. His forehead had been cut meticulously. It looked like someone had taken a knife to him, and his eyes were gone. In the night light, it had just looked like his eyes were closed. Now we knew better. The symbol on his forehead was somehow the worst part. Worse even than his eyes being gone. Strange as it sounds. Something about the shape of it scared the hell out of me. It wasn't just some random cuts and scrapes. There was geometry to it. A deep red circle and a bloody crosshair carved into the center. They were all too focused on the body to see it, but I did. Way off in the woods, deep in the trees, a light. A bright light, not a lantern or a flashlight, but a bright orange glow like a small sun in the moonlight. There was no doubt about it. Some great bonfire blazing somewhere in the forest, deep in the woods, in the clearing. I couldn't wrap my head around it. No one camped out here. No one ever did. The code dictated it. Nobody went into these woods if they could help it. On the same night that we found Dick dead. This was back in the 80s. I'm not proud to admit it, but out there in Shittsville, Washington, everyone was a die-hard conservative, Republican to the bone. We were still blaming Led Zeppelin and Ozzy Osbourne for teen violence, assuming everyone who listened to that shit started worshiping Satan and killing each other. I was 19, I didn't know better. I thought maybe some white trash metalheads had killed Dick as a dare, cut him up as a sick joke or something. So after we went to the police and got Dick's body out of the woods, I went home and got my father's gun, his old revolver that he kept around. I'm not proud of it, but I was scared. And angry. I was still just a kid in so many ways, desperate to make everything right. I loaded the gun, hid it, and drove the car back to where I'd found Dick. I was still under the influence. Some dumb kid who still believed in guns and Reagan and all that shit. I can't believe we were even allowed to keep guns around the way we did. I parked my car at the edge of the forest near the road, close to the streetlight. I walked the rest of the way. I didn't want to leave my car out there in the forest, just didn't seem wise. So I walked down between the trees, past where we had cut Dick down and out towards that light. My father stops for a while. It was difficult to get him to keep talking, but eventually he did. If nothing else, Oscar, just remember this. Never try to be brave or bold in any of that stupid crap. Never risk your life or anything like that when you've been out drinking. No shame in asking for help. Never go alone. If it wasn't for what had happened that night, I think we would have ended up living back in that town. You, your mother, and me. It was crap like what had happened to me that night that made me want to live out here in the city, well away from the countryside. America's old, vast. The rules are different here. Something about the place just makes things stranger. Things happen out here. In the older, wilder parts of America that don't happen anywhere else. I don't believe in God or the devil, but what I do believe in is that there are things out there in the woods and in the mountains that we don't understand. I came to a clearing where I had seen the bonfire. I had no idea what the hell I was looking at. Holding the gun didn't help either. I still felt myself trembling like a little boy. I was staring up at this massive wooden thing. Like a cross or a wicker man or something. Just like in that old movie. The one where they burn the man inside. But it was worse than that. Smaller, uneven, odd, and unnatural. Contorted. I thought of the old history textbooks where I'd seen the Ku Klux Klan burning crosses. And that's how I could best describe it. Like everything evil had came together in that clearing. I have no idea how the hell they did it. This great big crooked wooden cross built right there, less than a half a mile from town. And yes, I saw them. Jesus, I saw all of them. I hadn't even realized. There. There must have been 100 of them just standing there, watching me from the trees. They just appeared there. Like they simply bled out of the darkness. Simply came into being. They were so still, so quiet, so motionless. Even when someone's standing still, you could tell that they're alive. You could tell they're human. They sway, they react, but they just stood there. Didn't flinch. Then I realized that one of them was closer. Much closer than the others. Behind the effigy, watching me. I swear I would have seen him, her, them. I have no idea. Just a face. Almost featureless. Unnaturally even. Crazy bright. Eyes that looked miles deep. I bolted. I ran. I ran without looking back. I heard it. Heard them right on my heels. I heard the branches and bark snapping behind me. A second set of footfalls. A hell of a lot faster than mine. Half a heartbeat behind me, gaining. I sprinted as fast as my drunk, dumb young brain would allow me. I saw the outline of the asphalt, the reflection of the street lamps off my car. And then I thought, fuck it. Stand and fight. So I turned around, drew my father's gun, and aimed it straight. But he wasn't right behind me. He was 60 yards off, watching me. Watching me between the trees. And then he just slipped back into the darkness, like he had never been there. Like none of it had ever happened. My father paused and looked out the window. Our Boston brownstone looked out onto the Charles, and you could hear the sounds of the city outside. I think my father needed that. Needed it to remind him that there were people outside, that he was thousands of miles from that town. Something about them wasn't right, Oscar. Not right. That night, that experience, never left me. I don't think something like that does. The cross wasn't there the next morning, or the morning after that. And then one day I just stopped coming home from state. Moved away, got alive, didn't look back. A lot keeps me up at night. Shit I regret, shit that embarrasses me. But remembering that night, the way Dick's body dangled lifelessly in the air, seeing that pair of eyes from behind the effigy for the first time, that doesn't just keep me up at night. That makes me look twice over my shoulder in broad daylight. A lot else happened after 1989, but I'll leave that until the next post. Thanks everyone for your patience. It's been quite difficult going through all my family's documents and gathering the stories I can find. I needed to wait until my father and I were both back in Boston so we could piece some final details together. I have one last part to share with everyone. Hope this clears things up. This is about me now, primarily. I'm just writing things as I remembered them, looking back from 2022 to 2009. I was only 8 when this part happened, and for reasons you will soon probably understand, my father did his best to make me forget everything that I saw back then. No more delay. 2009, Washington State. My grandfather Roger Anderson's death. It seems meaningless to point out how macabre a funeral can be, as useless as pointing out how wet water is. But this time was special. There were a lot of unanswered questions about my grandfather, from what I remember. The way he suddenly turned around his fortunes in the 70s, soon after having his son Michael, my father, becoming a shining example of what kind of self-made man our town was able to produce. Families are always rising and falling in America. What made my grandfather different? By 2009, most of the woods had disappeared. The town my father and grandfather knew was quickly evaporating. A lot of the old tales of the woods had started to become lost in time. Only a handful seemed to remember them. Everyone who had heard them passed down via the old oral tradition was either dead or grown up. The latter category choosing not to pass the stories to their children, me and my generation, electing instead to keep talk of the woods out of the 2000s.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I was born in 2001, but nowhere near that town. My parents were working in LA at the time, so I was born down there in Pasadena. Though we didn't stay long enough for me to pick up the accent or the surf culture of California. We swiftly moved to the East Coast, when I was just shy of 2 years old, and we barely even visited my dad's family back in Washington. Barely spoke about them either. Not that we even addressed this out loud. Nor had any animosity developed between my father and his parents. They just drifted. I had only visited Washington State once before when I was about 6 months old. I can't remember anything about it, obviously. But from what my parents told me, we never left the Seattle limits after touching down. My dad's parents had to drive down to meet us for the weekend before we flew back to LAX. After we moved out east, my father made one or two more trips back to see his folks. But he never went further than Tacoma. I never thought to ask why. But it struck me as odd. Growing up in Boston, I couldn't imagine ever not wanting to come back. But for my father, no distance between him and his hometown was big enough. And so it was until my grandfather died in 2009 at the relatively young age of 60. Not that deaths at that age were particularly uncommon. He had been a manual laborer and grew up in a poor part of the States. His mother drank and smoked and did everything in between when she was pregnant with him. Not to mention he himself was a habitual smoker and never went easy on the alcohol during his post-trip works to the bar with his lager pals. I hadn't really ever developed any sort of relationship with him or his wife Mary, my grandmother. I had been forced to speak with them over the phone a few times. The way parents often force their kids to say a polite, "How do you do?" to any relatives that come calling around Christmas time. I didn't even remember what his voice sounded like. So we made the trip. My father, Michael, had been dreading for years. The three of us, me, mother, and father, packed a week's worth of luggage and headed to Boston Logan before boarding the excruciating flight to Washington. We touched down, walking straight from the terminal to the rental car before making the long drive up north to my father's hometown. He had made sure to sleep on the plane in anticipation of making the drive. He made the trip solo, effectively, as my mom and I dozed off instantly in the passenger seats. I reckon he hated that, making the drive without a soul to speak to. In the dark, driving home between the trees. I woke up at around 2 a.m. to the sound of a car door slamming. My father had gotten out, and as my eyes adjusted, I realized we were in the driveway of a large house. Flashy, modern, recently built. The driveway was trendy, made of gravel. The house was two stories, mostly new, exposed red brickwork. The living room was really quite something,
a large circular room, whose walls were almost entirely person-sized windows, so that you could see clearly inside from the driveway. The black shapes of couches, lamps, and coffee tables formed silhouettes against the view of the back garden, through the sets of windows on the far side. And beyond those, just the trees. I saw my father embrace a woman who looked about 60, but the dead giveaway was the fact that she looked so similar. I could see a clear reflection of my father in the creases of this old woman's face. She was my own flesh and blood, yet I felt no connection to her. She caught me staring at her and my father and waved to me through the glass of the car window, smiling. Smiling like a wolf at a rabbit. I was half-walked, half-carried into my late grandfather's house and up to the guest bedroom before being laid out onto a temporary spring bed in the corner. I was only 8 back then, and the flight had completely taken me out. So I slipped off pretty quickly after we got in. I had to get with my father to fill in the gaps of what happened that night. This part, according to my father, Michael, from a conversation in 2022. Me. You remember the night we got there, right? Dad. Of course. You and your mom were always lousy flyers. So you went straight to bed. We laid you down to sleep, and you could barely keep your eyes open. Me. Why hadn't you spoken to your parents for so long? Dad, reaching for his glass of water. Things were a little weird for me after what had happened back in 89, as I'm sure you could imagine. He took some time downing his water at this point, as if he was stalling. So the town wasn't really the same for me. Tried to steer clear. Always found an excuse to be at staying with friends from college over the vacation periods, etc. Me. So nothing happened between you and Roger? Dad. Nothing specific. He was a very different man to who he had been as a teen and a young man. Everyone said so. He wasn't very personable by the time I was 19, 20 and headed off to college. Me. Did you have any inkling about what you'd find at this house in 2009? Dad. Jeez, oh Oscar, of course not. I had no frickin' clue he had. Me. I know, Dad, sorry. But what did you and Mary talk about that night? Dad. Jeez, oh, everything, anything, nothing. She was my own mother and I hadn't even seen her since 2006 or 2007, when I had last flown out to Seattle to see them. Spoken to her on the phone once or twice, so we had a lot of catching up to do. About my father, what things have been like for him in the last few months. Me. I can't recall how exactly they said he died. Dad. That's just about tracks. No one had a frickin' clue. 2 coroners and a top-rated medical examiner couldn't even figure it out. He drank like a hog and smoked like he was LB. But his liver was clean as a whistle, lungs like a man's half his age. That was the weirdest thing, actually. The fact that he seemed to be frozen in his 20s. At least on the inside. But they couldn't find anything wrong with him. Nothing with his heart, no stroke, no hemorrhages, or anything like that with his brain. It was like his soul had just left one afternoon and left a perfectly healthy body behind. Me. What did you tell people at the funeral? Dad. Shoot, if I could remember. I don't think anyone asked. Not because they didn't care, but I think everyone knew that we wouldn't have an answer. No one really knew how to deal with this type of crap. This type of crap always happens in that frickin' town. Dad took a second to collect himself. This is the rest of what he told me. Your grandmother and I started talking business after all the pleasantries were over with. What we would do with the company now that my father was dead, and what we should do with the employees we could no longer afford. It was the strangest thing. As soon as Roger died, everything just went to crap. Someone drowned on the job the day after Roger died, just like that kid back in 69. Then all the machinery started breaking down. Like someone flipped a switch and put everything on the FUBAR setting. Screwed up beyond all recognition.
Please don't tell your mother I'm talking like this. What I'm starting to notice was that my mother didn't seem to give a crap about my dad dying. I mean, here we were, days after her husband died. They had known each other their entire lives. Met when they were little, and she was sitting there, smiling, making us tea. Talking about Roger dying as if it was exchanging baseball scores or some crap. The other thing was that everything in Dad's house was just frickin' weird. He and my mom were getting old, so I expected a little hoarding and crap like that. But I mean, there were these little wooden figures everywhere. Dream catchers on the wall and all of that. Looked like some sort of friend's room back in the late 80s and 90s when I was in college. It was just weird. Like I had wandered into some stranger's house and she was wearing my mother's skin. It was one of the weirdest things I had ever experienced. And something about the figurines, the wood, my mind made a connection with my conscious self, just wasn't ready to accept. Eventually, I tired Mom out and she went to bed. It was 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. by this time, basically morning. But it was winter, so the outdoors were still pitch black, other than the porch lights in the backyard and the driveway. I sat in the living room for a while, trying to take it all in. I loved my father, goes without saying, but his death had somehow, I don't know, taken a weight off my shoulders. Town seemed less scary somehow. You remember how I used to hate having to go back there. Never told you any of this as a kid, but you're old enough to know now that even adults shit themselves from time to time. I don't think I'd ever have a chance getting to sleep before Dad's funeral later that morning. So I set about trying to find whatever documents he had left behind. That was when you woke up and found me downstairs, rummaging through his desk. You remember that, right? Me. Yeah, I think I remember. Remember how freaking scared you looked? Don't use that type of language, Oscar. But yeah, I was freaked the F out. Had no idea what was going on. When we found the locked strongbox under his desk, you must remember the size of that frickin' thing. I knew something was off about it, but I was still looking at those freaky little wooden toys and wooden crosses he had littered about the place. I tried to open it, obviously. You stood there, watching me wide-eyed, as kids do when they're 8. Couldn't find the key, thought to myself. Screw it, old man's dead. So I just took a hammer and screwdriver to it and broke the damn lock open. The rest was easy, at least in the sense of the damn thing finally being open. I don't mean that frickin' mindfuck we got afterwards. I knew immediately what I was looking at. That's why I sent you back upstairs to your mother. Me. Yeah, you wouldn't let me look inside. You told me to hurry back up to bed. I thought you were angry at me. No, kiddo. You were a great kid. I didn't want you to see that messed up shit. I mean, I've known Roger my whole life, only to frickin' find that days after he died. There were hairs. Human frickin' hairs. And teeth. And frickin' fingernails. All packed up into little plastic Ziploc baggies. Like he was the frickin' tooth fairy or some shit. Then there was the photos. Some grainier than others, obviously taken in the 80s. I immediately recognized that. That frickin' cross from 89. I swear, that photo must have been taken that same frickin' night I found it. My father was there. He was frickin' there with me in the clearing. Me. Dad, it's all right. I know, kiddo. Sorry. This shit's just so... Anyways. There were other photos, more recent. Obviously from the 90s and 2000s, right up until he died. People hanging, cut deep, eyes gouged out. You don't want to know the rest. The police who showed up that night, remember that? Me. Yeah, scared the crap out of me. Of course it did. Anyways, they started searching the place. That's why we went to the hotel room. But whatever was happening in those woods at night, Roger had been a part of it. At least since 1970 or 71. Sometime around when I was born, when his fortune turned. They found a shit ton of spooky frickin' weird shit there. books the police couldn't even read, because they weren't written in frickin' English. Had they get a professor out from Washington State who could read the frickin' Persian or Sanskrit or some shit. They were frickin' killing people, gouging their eyes out, because they... Should note that my dad was basically crying at this point. They thought it was making them rich, making them lucky. I don't even frickin' know. They were just killing people, burning them, taking their frickin' eyes out when they were still alive. I think that night in 89 they were going to kill me, but my old man recognized me and stopped them before I had a chance. Something like that. They let me go, because he couldn't bring himself to frickin' kill me. Me. I'm sorry, Dad. 2022. My father, a man in his early 50s, is reduced to tears at the table. Outside, Boston is settling down into the humdrum of the weeknight dusk. You could hear cars on the avenue, people below. I could hear boats on the Charles from our brownstone. And somewhere, thousands of miles away in the woods of Washington, they're still out there. Just like my father, I doubt I'll ever go back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.